Chapter 9. A truck driver gave Sarah the finger and leaned on his air horn as she went around him on the sidewalk going down the Avenue of the Americas. In New York, that was like being serenaded by a bluebird. The station house was a mad zoo, reporters bumping into perps and cops at the entrance. Sarah stashed her bike in the motor pool. The Hayabusa was back. She could sense the tension going up the stairs, and her worst fears were confirmed when she pushed open the door to the detective's bullpen. Deputy Commissioner McElroy, with the physique and disposition of a nose tackle, was in Siri's office taking up most of the space and talking in a loud voice while one of his lackeys took notes in a pad, as if the fat blowhard had something to say. Everyone knew McElroy was gunning to be the next commissioner, and was mainly concerned with covering his ass and making sure he made no mistakes. He should have been an executive producer for one of the major film studios. As she headed toward her desk trying to look inconspicuous, Raj hissed at her like a spitting cobra. Raj was a 2-year veteran, originally a citizen of New Delhi who had emigrated several years ago, become a US citizen, and joined the police force. He had dark, delicate, almost feminine features, hair the color of fresh poured tar, and thick black horn-rimmed glasses. Sarah always thought, affirmative action baby, and she was always ashamed. It would never occur to her in a million years that she was also an affirmative action baby. "What up, Raj? The captain asked me to review those tapes. I have been watching night and day, and I have found the killer on the tapes." A Nova pulsed through Sarah's nervous system. "Where is it? Have you got it queued up?" "In the break room." They went to the break room down the hall, where three detectives were stuffing their faces at the thrift store table. The break room contained a counter, cabinets, a sink, a refrigerator, a microwave oven, a wild collection of ugly furniture, and the audiovisual center. More fruit of the busted drug dealer tree. Raj cued the 52-inch TV and a grainy black and white. Blue and white actually, tape began to roll. Like crows sensing carrion, the three detectives rose or turned their chairs to watch. "Watch, you will see," Raj said softly. The timer in the corner of the screen indicated 11:30 p.m. The room was empty, light coming from the banker's lamp on the counter, and from an overhead source. Movement. A slight, balding figure in a dark sport jacket, probably navy blue, entered the picture from the shop door and went behind the counter. He seemed agitated. He was fumbling for something beneath the counter, a gun? Another figure entered the room. The second figure was clad entirely in black, even his head, and seemed to flow into the room like a cat stalking prey. The figure erupted like a geyser in front of the old man. It was difficult to tell from the camera angle. The figure delivered a series of blows with his gloved hands, subtly, delicately, as if he were playing a harp. The figure seized the sword off its rack, plainly visible in the video, and in one graceful movement, flicked the blade through the old man's neck as easily as if he were cutting a cheese log. The head fell heavily to the floor and rolled. A tingle ran up Sarah's arm from the costume bracelet. "Jesus Christ," one of the dicks said softly. "There's your samurai killer. Raj, can you freeze the frame?" Raj ran the tape backwards, searched in slow-mo for the best angle on the assailant. There was no good angle. You couldn't even tell how tall he was. Black cloth covered his entire body, including his hands. Everything but his eyes, which were exposed. "What is this ninja shit?" one of the detectives asked. "Pezzini's on the case," said Barley Carruthers, the size and shape of a restaurant freezer. "Freak of the week." Baltazar stuck his head in the door. "Hey Sarah. Siri wants you in his office like 5 minutes ago. Keep working on that tape, Raj," Sarah said. "There's gotta be a computer geek around here somewhere who can tell us something. And you guys, please don't mention this to anyone. The boss'll have a cow." Deputy Commissioner McElroy was beet-colored and sweating as Sarah entered Siri's office. This was not unusual. The deputy commissioner maintained a state of high dudgeon. That was his pose, the perpetually indignant public servant, fighting for the commonweal. Sarah thought it must have been exhausting, but apparently it worked. McElroy had risen through the ranks without spending time on the street. If he could do it, more power to him, Sarah thought. "Detective Pezzini, you know Deputy Commissioner McElroy. Have a seat." Sarah nodded and sat. Siri didn't offer her anything to drink. "Detective," McElroy wheezed, "Scott Chalmers was a close friend of the mayor. There's no way we can keep this out of the papers, but we can try to minimize the sensationalism, so to speak, if we can assure the press that these killings are not related." "I'm sorry, Commissioner, but in my opinion they are related." Siri tried not to roll his eyes. He had witnessed many futile attempts at spin control over the years, but this was the dumbest. Of course they're related, Hank. The coroner's already confirmed that. McElroy regarded Siri through little slit eyes, as if he beheld a snake. The last thing the mayor wants is for this to become a media freak show. The public spooks easily. Sir, I respectfully disagree, Sarah said while Siri made a throat-cutting motion with his finger and tried desperately to signal her. When she refused to look at him, he retaliated by sticking the cigar in his mouth. New Yorkers can handle anything this freak throws at them. I think they've proven that. Not that I'm suggesting you publicize this, but it's hardly a terrorist attack. These men were specifically targeted for something they had, ancient Japanese swords. McElroy turned his gun slits on her. He appeared to be chewing his tongue. Why is it you attract bizarre criminal elements, detective? Why are you a freak magnet? Sir, this case was assigned to me. I think if you'll check, you'll see I was miles away from Ether crime scene when the killings occurred. You're right, I apologize. The city's lucky to have you. So, you're obviously making progress. We're looking for a murderous thief? So it would seem. We have the killer on videotape, but it doesn't tell us much. He's just a blur dressed in black. We may be able to get more details from a computer enhancement. All right. Now we're getting somewhere. Anything you need, give me a call. The mayor wants you to know he's behind you 100%. What are you going to say at the press conference? Sarah shrugged. Sir, I haven't had time to catch my breath since I woke up. If you'll give me a few moments, please emphasize that these are not terrorist incidents. I'll make it clear the killer only targets rich white men. Siri grunted and tossed his cigar over his shoulder. Are you trying to be funny? I was out of line. McElroy glared at her with his knackwurst face. He heaved himself to his feet. No jokes? Short and sweet. The mayor is watching. Siri and Sarah got up too. They all shook hands and McElroy rumbled out the door like a hay baler and headed for the stairs. Sarah held her hands up, trying to suppress a smile. I know. I'm sorry. Sarah, why do you do this to me? Putting me on the spot in front of the deputy commissioner, if you weren't my best detective, I'd. What, Joe, what? Say it. Ship me out to Far Rockaway? You heard what the man said. You'd better prepare a statement. Keep it short, 25 words or less. You got, he glanced at his watch. 1 hour. You're hosting this thing, aren't you? That's right. You know what you're going to say? Some wackadinghoy is running around in black pajamas slicing off heads. Sarah pointed a finger at him. That's good, Joe. She let herself out and headed toward her desk. Baltazar worked his eyebrows like he was transmitting a secret message and nodded toward the front desk. You got a visitor. David Kopkind lounged, one leg up, on the wooden bench facing the bullpen.